Okay, please be seated, everyone. Our next case is case number 76848, Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department versus District Court. Who are party in interest is the Las Vegas Review Journal. Okay, we have Mr. Crosby representing the petitioner here, and we have Ms. McClatchy representing the real party in interest.
Okay.
Mr. Crosby, you may proceed. Did you wish to reserve some time for rebuttal?
If I may reserve 2 minutes, Your Honor.
You may do so.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Nick Crosby on behalf of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, the petitioner in the instant emergency writ of mandamus petition. As set forth in the petition, the issues before this court primarily deal with two things. One, whether or not discovery is permitted under NPRA or in mandamus proceedings, and secondarily, whether the district court abused its discretion in ordering party representatives to appear at a meet and confer in conjunction with an NPRA request. Specifically speaking, or as noted in the briefing, the department's issues are first is whether the court erred in ordering discovery in a mandamus proceeding. It's the department's position that discovery akin to that found in civil litigation is not permitted in mandamus proceedings. First and foremost, Nevada Revised Statute 34.300 does not specifically reference discovery. It mentions that the rules of civil procedure apply, but looking at Chapter 34 as a whole, in a statutory construction context, the only place that discovery is specifically mentioned by the legislature is found in 34.780, where the legislature decided intentionally to not only include in the title of that chapter, or that statute, discovery, but also set forth in the second and third provisions of that statute the specific procedures and limitations and reach.
I appreciate your statutory argument. I am concerned about the procedural posture of this case. It comes to us, and we don't even have a notice of depo of a 30B6 and the topics that they might want the CR to address. We have an order that says you shall meet and confer. That could occur even arguably under 239 without this whole vast issue of how much discovery and the rules of civil procedure and the rest of it. I'm troubled by this coming up on a writ in such an inchoate posture, and that we're not, I mean, it didn't go forward. There was an order, as I understand it, that you meet and confer and bring client rep to the meet and confer, and if that failed to produce the desired narrowing, then there could be served a notice of CR depo that would be subject to objections and motion practice and whatever. You know, when I did commercial litigation, if somebody sent me a notice of depo and it was overbroad, I would move to, you know, I'd meet and confer and then move for a protective order. But you're not even to that stage. You're at a preliminary discussion of how much is it going to cost to produce these documents, and do you really want as many documents and the range of documents that you're saying. So I'm a little troubled by this procedurally.
I understand, Your Honor. That actually brings us to one of the issues addressed is whether or not the district court had the authority in the first instance to order party representatives to the meet and confer. Had the court ordered that the counsel for the parties engage in a meet and confer conference, as Judge Hardy did previously, and the parties met and were able to reach a stipulation, which is in the record, that would be a completely different posture.
But that's almost a settlement. Like, that's almost ordering a settlement conference in a records case. If I order you to meet with opposing counsel and see if you guys can work out what it is you really want, and can you stipulate to it, I'm not even sure that tees up the discovery issue.
Correct, Your Honor. I don't think...
Do you order party representative to settlement conferences all the time?
Pardon, Your Honor. I was starting to talk when you talked.
I apologize. Don't we order party representatives to attend settlement conferences all the time, or... Doesn't the district court?
Correct, but the fundamental difference, Your Honor, in ordering parties to a settlement conference is that there's a third party neutral to evaluate and moderate the situation. It's much different when you're ordering essentially what it would amount to a interview, for lack of a better term, by a requester in a Public Records Act, in this case the Las Vegas Review Journal, for purposes of conducting and I don't want to use the word interrogation, but the ability to interview various people or a person, depending on the number of people who show, and as a forced appearance. It's not a deposition. It's not a settlement conference. It's not a mediation. It is, in essence, a forced interview, in this case, with the Las Vegas Review-Journal, but in the global scheme or the grand picture of the scheme, it would be an interview with any requester. So,
Mr. Fryer.
With Metro, it's so intricate how records are actually produced that why would it be an abuse of discretion by the district court to say, bring the parties in and allow some of the people, the employees, to explain how event numbers work, how they're generated, and then all of the different, I mean, there's a ton of different ways. I didn't even know of some of the ways until I read some of the record.
Well, and Your Honor, we did provide in the record below a declaration of one of the representatives of LVMPD explaining in quite detail, I believe it's found in the record in volume 13, how Metro conducts its queries, what has to happen. We can't do it just by getting every report related to trespassing. We need an event number, or we need some personal identifying information that someone can locate that information and transfer it to records, and records can then, once it has that information, can then start compiling and reviewing what documents exist, if any, and are responsive. So that information is already there. So to force, quite candidly, force my client to physically be present, or representatives to answer questions, because in the context within which this meet and confer directive came, it was sit down and answer questions with the Las Vegas Review-Journal about these things. And if we went to a meet and confer, and my clients, for example, didn't answer one question, because I don't have a basis to object, there's no mediator, there's no moderator, it's not a deposition, which...
Mr. Crosby, I hate to interrupt your answer to Judge Silver. Had you completed it?
Enough, Your Honor, since you asked the question.
I want to follow up on Justice Pickering's expression of concern about the procedural posture of the case by asking you whether you had objected to the district court's authority to engage in this discovery process.
Yes, I did, Your Honor. In fact, it's found in the transcript at the very last page of the hearing I requested when I was seeking clarification.
And the district court, if I read this correctly, in page 2, I think, of the order, effectively rejects your argument as to the relationship between Chapter 34 and the MPRA, right?
Correct. The district court found that their discovery is permitted in the MPRA based upon Chapter 34, MPRA, and the court's inherent powers to manage
its cases. So to be clear, the petitioner's petition in this case is asking this court to specifically address the arguments that the district court rejected in the district court about whether discovery could be pursued, whether you could order, meet, and confer, whether you could even engage in discovery, and then secondarily, whether you could order a party to attend those meet and confer conferences.
Correct, Your Honor. Those arguments.
I'm just trying to frame.
Yes, those arguments were made, and so
the absence of a 30B6 deposition or notice, or a specific form of discovery isn't what's critical to the petitioner. It's the rejection by the district court of your defense to the claim of any discovery at all, right?
Well, I think, Your Honor, the court's announcement that mandate discovery is permitted in mandamus proceedings and under the MPRA is the umbrella.
But has the court ordered you to provide any discovery as of yet?
No, we've not received a notice of deposition.
And you've not been ordered to provide any discovery. So whatever the court has said, it's said on the record, but you have not been directed by Rule 30, 33, 34,
Correct.
35 would apply. You haven't had any discovery
propounded
addressed to you at all.
Correct, Your Honor.
So then what's the objection to the meet and confer?
Well, the objection to the meet and confer is that quite frankly, that the lower court judge ordered that party representatives appear at the meet and confer. That is the objection that was stated in the briefing.
But the legal, it's not because it's discovery, which your position is the court can't order.
The position is, from a chronological standpoint, as it stands on the order, based upon the order states that the party shall meet and confer and discuss these issues, and at that point, discovery can come about in the form of custodian of record depositions. Now, prior, Judge Hardy had announced that custodian of record depositions can begin right away. And again, Your Honor, we have not received 30B6 depositions, but the way that the posture of this case is from Judge Hardy was that the parties are mandated with their personal or their representatives to appear to this meet and confer.
But why is that meet and confer immediately discovery? It could also be settlement. I mean, honestly, looking at this record, we tend to make better decisions when something is vetted and shaped by the district court. And I'm concerned. I think that our Rule 16, whatever it is, says you can order a party representative to attend a
settlement conference.
And to me, in a records case, you get a broad request for inspection of documents or production of records. I'm using discovery terminology. But the judge says, can you parties work this out without me having to do it? Can you come to yes on what is subject to production, when, and at what cost?
And that can be achieved, Your Honor, without party representatives present. And that was our challenge to Judge Hardy.
But is there a problem in the looking at this as if it were a settlement conference, saying the court has the power to say, look, I'm not getting anywhere with the lawyers. I would like someone from Metro to come and have a dialogue with someone from RJ about this issue?
If it were a settlement conference posture, there would be a third party neutral to moderate
that
situation.
That
is a big distinction in forcing client representatives to appear at a meet and confer to address the five things.
I didn't see any case law on that. I researched a little bit, like the Seventh Circuit split opinion, Heilman Brewing versus Joseph Oat, on compelling parties to go to settlement conferences and the dispute about whether courts have inherent authority to do that because it's not directly authorized. And it split the court pretty badly. I actually thought, not surprisingly, the dissent was right, but the court ordered the parties to attend. And I think that's pretty much settled law now. That was a 1989 case, that the court can order parties to come to court to try to resolve it. I see your point about the third party neutral, but I don't see any case law in your brief about why it's wrong in a Public Records Act case where you're trying to get this resolved as quickly and expeditiously as possible. It commands first order of business on the district court's calendar. The district court can't say, hey, can you guys get together and talk about this, either with or without a neutral, and see if you can get this resolved?
Well, and Your Honor,
that's what you have here.
And I appreciate that. And again, I've already emphasized the fact of it with the settlement conference or third-party neutral. But subsequent to our initial conference, we engaged in discussions and meeting with counsel. We were able to craft a stipulation. And since that time, the department has been routinely providing documents on a rolling basis in conjunction with that, so that the basis, the need that the respondents put forth as to the need to have a meet and confer is gone. We've provided evidence, declaration, as to how the department searches, where it searches, what needs to be done to do it. We've provided how the costs are calculated. We provided, I believe there are 8 declarations in there. So the information sought is already available and has been presented to the respondents.
Was that provided in late August before the second order was entered, or is that post that?
Those are provided in the supplemental briefing.
Uh-huh.
And so now what it is that the LVRJ in this case wants further information on how documents are stored and who searches them. How documents are stored is not a public record under the Public Records Act. What a public employee knows in her mind is not a public record. What RJ is seeking to do is under the guise of limiting costs, which potentially there could be a situation where that scenario could limit costs, but the reality is the information that they're seeking or professing to seek in this meet and confer or these depositions, if they were to occur, is has already been provided to the LVRJ, so that issue is not, or the basis for the request is moot. They've been provided that issue and, or that information, and the issue of production is no longer an issue because the department is producing documents, has been on a rolling basis every Friday, I believe.
Well, if it becomes an issue, and you say that you've already provided it, but they're not satisfied with that, and you've already met and conferred, wouldn't you wait for them to notice a deposition? And in the notice, they get specifically what they want from you, and then you can take it up from there.
That is an avenue that certainly I could see a case running that way, but in the posture of this case was coming.
That was created by the judge in his order. He goes on at length about all the things, the process that's to take place. I'm going back to Justice Pickering's question. What's that issue in front of us today?
Both issues, but I think the prime, if I may finish my response, the issue is the district court ordered my client representatives to be present in a meet and confer in a non-moderated setting with no authority, and I understand there are, I can't find cases either, but that the absence of that authority.
But her point to you is there's no authority cited on this in your petition.
There's
a legal point.
There's no authority that provides a district court the ability to force a party to meet with another party for purposes of interrogating that person on the manner in which they store public records.
So your position is Rule 16 isn't sufficient authority to order the parties to meet?
I don't think Rule 16 allows counsel to, if you look at EDCR 2.34, it mentions counsel to meet, and it cites 16. I'm sorry,
Mr. Crosby, you haven't had the meet and confer with the client present to even know what they're going to do in the meet and confer. Your assumption here in this argument is that they're going to interrogate one of your representatives.
I think that's very real. But the
so why wouldn't you meet and confer? If that is what transpires, you would object and take that up with the district court judge, that this is not a deposition, this is a meet and confer, and they're not allowed to interrogate your client.
And if I do that, Your Honor, I run the risk of not meeting in good faith, which is what the court expected, and I don't have the ability to control that like I would have in a deposition.
Did you ever go back to the district court and say, what do you mean by the scope of meet and confer? I just don't know if we have a dispute yet.
And I don't think yet. And given the department's production of documents, and I'm well beyond my time, I don't know.
Go ahead.
Given the department's production of documents on a rolling basis pursuant to the stipulation, I think the issue of a meet and confer with the party representative is moot at this point.
Well, that may very well be, but that underscores the whole point that Justice Pickering's been asking about. What are we supposed to resolve?
Of course, I would request the court resolve that the district court error abused its discretion in ordering party representatives to appear at a meet and confer that is not moderated by a third party.
And in fairness to you, you cited the Sargent case in your petition.
Correct.
So I don't want it to say there's no authority, but I've tried to find more because it's an interesting legal point.
And I was pinpointed more on a direct legal authority with respect to in the civil context. It's obviously the Sargent case.
Yeah. Judge Silver.
I'm just confused at why Metro would be so scared. Routinely, they meet and confer, for example, with both sides and criminal. So you'd have a defense attorney. You might have other witnesses there during even an evidence review. And personnel always, they freely talk with attorneys from both sides and other witnesses and carry on and have a whole meeting.
I think that's
you characterize it as like an interrogation. But if you actually, in reality, I've never seen that. I've seen them always try to be really helpful to explain the process of a public agency, and they've always been quite outright. So I'm just confused on the interrogation.
I've never seen it, Your Honor, because I've never seen a court order my party to appear to meet and confer, to answer questions regarding topics that have already been addressed and identified. And furthermore, the department doesn't have a requester in the Public Records Act doesn't have the right to dictate how a government agency searches its records or databases or responds, just that they conduct an adequate search and provide the records, which I
think. But you're assuming that's exactly what that there's going to be some sort of cross-examination and that you're powerless to stop it. And I appreciate the good faith hammer, but until you, in a deposition, you can excuse yourself and move for a protective order under 30E or whatever the rule is, I would think that if they were interrogating, abusing that privilege of the meet and confer and trying to narrow what documents they want and how much it's going to cost, it might play out correctly and to everyone's benefit. You might get to yes sooner rather than later.
Potentially, but again, we've been producing the records, so I don't see the need anymore now as we sit here today.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
Okay, Mr. Krasny, we'll give you 2 minutes in rebuttal here.
Thank you,
we asked you a lot of questions. We'll, Elizabeth, if you could add 2 minutes to Ms. McClatchy's time, and we'll go ahead and hear from her now.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors. Maggie McClatchy for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Metro is one of the biggest taxpayer-funded agencies in Nevada, and it plays a vital role with regard to the administration of criminal justice in the state. Transparency about policy issues such as how it handles sex trafficking cases is very important. And despite Metro's conduct in response to the initial request designed to seek transparency on this important topic, Metro is not above the Public Records Act. It's also not above the jurisdiction of a district court to supervise an action brought to enforce the NPRA. I think that district court does have inherent powers to do what it does. And Metro, in this proceeding, has the burden of showing otherwise and hasn't provided any authority showing otherwise. I think the Sargent case is distinguishable because it's a criminal case. The district courts do have inherent power under the rules of civil procedure, which do apply in petitions. There is no attorney-client privilege issue. Mr. Crosby is more than capable of defending his client should issues come up. He could suspend a meet and confer. I had a party representative at initial meet and confer, Mr. Joseph, the reporter, and it ended up being very helpful. The district court found, however, that it would have been additionally helpful to have a representative from Metro. So what the district court said was, look, you guys have made progress. Metro initially acted in bad faith. Things seem to be improving. But I think it would help if you guys would meet and confer again with a party representative from Metro. That's what the district court said. He then said, if that was unsuccessful, then certain limited discovery may proceed.
What is it exactly that you're looking for? So Mr. Crosby's saying he has no clue, so he doesn't know how to prepare for it.
I understand. Well, during the meet and confer, what we want to talk about are matters such as what actual databases exist and how records are stored. Contrary to Mr. Crosby's arguments, in fact, a public records requester is entitled to have some information about how records are searched because the NPRA specifically provides that if a requester wants a record in electronic form and it's readily available, then the requester can have it in electronic form. The declarations provided by Metro, for example, one of the declarations they provided doesn't actually explain what database they searched. The district court considered arguments made by the Review Journal and specific factual inconsistencies that we raised, and the district court specifically found that there were inconsistencies with regard to privileges that Metro asserted, with regard to whether documents actually existed that Metro said did not exist, and whether or not records existed in electronic form that Metro said did not exist in electronic form. And again, that's important because the NPRA specifically allows us to get it in electronic form if that's feasible. In the PERS case, this court recently handled a request regarding electronic discovery. And those were all based on specific factual issues that we raised. Here's another example. With regard to the cost debate, Metro raised an argument regarding cost. We wanted to challenge some of the assertions regarding cost, and there's a dispute about cost in this case. During the initial meet and confer, I asked Metro for a copy of the cost study that was referenced in one of the declarations or affidavits that they provided. Metro, in response to that, said that I would have to make a separate Public Records Act request. And this is because Metro conflates whether or not a record is reachable under the public records request with what a district court can require a litigant to do in a public records case. We ended up getting some information, but still don't have the cost study that I believe was referenced. We're entitled to that information. If this court were to accept Metro's position that it need not comply with the court order, that it need not provide information or cooperate in the case, we would end up with hydras. I would have to file another separate court action, another NPRA action, to get the cost study that they're declaring referenced in declaration.
But let me just interrupt you for a second. Going back to the meet and confer, again, looking at this from whether or not discovery can be compelled is another issue, and you get into all kinds of issues. But as Justice Pickering indicated, where's the authority for the meet and confer? And I know the judge in his order cited inherent authority. Is that particularly where you're focusing for his authority to do that, as opposed to other discovery? This meet and confer is a different animal.
Sure, I do think his inherent authority allowed him to require us to go to a meet and confer. I also do think that the second meet and confer was akin to a settlement conference. Because actually what happened in this case is Metro raised a number of privileges that it ended up dropping. Metro right. also asserted that it could charge an hourly rate for review and production of documents. It dropped that argument. The district court was initially very concerned with Metro's behavior in response to the request. It felt that after the initial meet and confer with my client and with counsel that progress was made, but it felt that further progress could be made and that we could resolve
right.
issues. And it hoped that we could
and
resolve
I'm trying to get to the court's authority to do that, other than inherent authority. Because it's not a settlement conference. You don't have a neutral there. Counsel made that point, and he's correct.
Sure.
So where does this animal come?
Well, in addition to inherent authority, I do think that looking at the Public Records Act, what the Public Records Act says is that all its terms have to be interpreted in favor of access. That includes the provision regarding court access. The NPRA doesn't say
right,
much.
But court access is one, that's a different thing. Again, it's a different animal. Discovery is a whole different, you do have discovery rights potentially, but meet and confer is different.
Well, I think that the provision regarding court access has to be interpreted in a way that furthers the ultimate goal of the Public Records Act, because that's what the legislature says. It says every single provision has to be interpreted in further access. And I think narrowing the district court's authority does the opposite of following that legislative mandate. Because requiring a party representative to attend a meet and confer can further transparency by getting us the records more quickly. It can promote efficiency, which the Public Records Act explicitly mandates.
Did you cite any law on this idea that parties in a public records case should be required to sit down and talk to one another about what they want, whether they can narrow it, how much it's going to cost, and how long it will take?
I did not, and neither did Metro.
That's one of the issues, because to me that's what you're talking about and what he's talking about. And you need a third-party neutral to mediate, or not mediate, but preside or participate. But it does seem to me to make sense what the policy of trying to get to yes quickly and resolve these issues rather than have it be a combative setting one another up for outrageously broad requests versus bad faith. I mean, really, you're trying to get information, I would think.
And I think what the district will point out, too, is that the more the case goes on, it's either going to waste the review journal's resources or it's going to waste the taxpayer resources. And wasting the review journal's resources could very well mean a waste of taxpayer resources because they have to pay fees and costs if we prevail. So that was another concern of the district court.
Yeah, and that's a one-way street. They don't have the right back. And so I see his concern as well.
Well, I think the issue with discovery is that there's a general... There, with regard to discovery, general rules of relevance would apply, and I think the issue is they never made a case in district court. They did make a general request for discovery of the review journal. Frankly, I think lined up this petition, but they never explained what discovery they would get at, and it's hard for me to imagine the types of discovery that would be appropriate. But the meet and confer was more than...
Well, and that's part of the argument against allowing discovery, because it'd be entirely one-sided. I mean, I have the same thought, exactly what could they propound that would be... legitimate. Discovery is normally a two-way street.
But the district court never actually said that only the review journal could get discovery.
Right.
The district court considered specific issues that we raised.
Well, and no discovery has been propounded,
correct.
Much less so.
Said that discovery might be appropriate if the meet and confer were not successful.
And the point of that would be to follow up and understand what the basis for the objections are that are being raised by Metro to the public records request.
Correct. To see if there would be a way for us to work together to more efficiently get what the reporter is seeking, because the reporter would be there too, without creating burden. For example, we raised the question in district court of how and why they give the FBI statistics, and maybe we would be able to get access to records that they used to give the FBI statistics that are similar to some of the statistics that were headed. We thought that we agreed with the district court that sitting in a room together and trying to resolve these issues would solve the concerns. With regard to whether emergency relief should issue to Metro to stop a meet and confer proceeding, I think this case is very, very different from, say, the Aspen Financial case concerning the reporter shield. While Metro claims that attorney-client privilege issues could come up, there's nothing attorney-client privilege about how Metro stores its documents, what documents Metro stores. There is no privilege at stake. And again, Mr. Cosby and his associate would be there to protect our client. They're more than able to do that. I think that information about how and why records are stored would certainly be helpful. Metro complains that we might use this to do further requests. That would further the NCRA and the stated goal of transparency and could ultimately, rather than cause harm or waste resources, it would make the proceedings more efficient, could ultimately save both the taxpayers and the review journal money. More generally, with regard to the discovery arguments, Metro takes the position, first, that if something's not explicitly in the NPRA, procedurally speaking, it can't be permitted. That just can't be the case. All that the NPRA does is say, first, you can go to court to get access to records. Second, those proceedings have to be expedited. And if the requester wins, you have to pay them their fees and costs. It also sets forth a big high burden for governmental entities. Those four things aren't it. The Public Records Act doesn't specify any kind of details regarding procedures. This court has said that petitions for writ of mandamus can be an appropriate procedural mechanism for a requester to go to court. This court, I don't think, has ever said it's the exclusive remedy. In Donray and DR Partners, the court did observe that a petition for writ of mandamus was an appropriate procedural mechanism. So even if their arguments about petitions, which are wrong, the limitations on habeas discovery should be interpreted instead to say that there's no limitation in a writ of mandamus proceeding. Those arguments are wrong, but even if they're right about petitions and allowing for discovery, that doesn't mean they're not appropriate in a public records case, because this court has just observed generally that writ of mandamus, without considering this question of discovery, is an appropriate mechanism. I think in the DR Partners case, this court says it's the appropriate procedural mechanism in this case. It never said it's the sole and exclusive mechanism to enforce the remedy, to enforce the NPRA, or the exclusive remedy. Metro, after arguing that the NPRA doesn't specifically allow for discovery and that petitions don't allow for discovery, making those arguments, Metro also goes on to a sort of Hail Mary pass, and it asks this court to adopt the FOIA framework specific to discovery disputes, and I mean, not just discovery disputes, but public records disputes more generally. And I want to address that issue because it's a dangerous proposition. It's a dangerous proposition because FOIA and the NPRA, while this court sometimes does, and appropriately so, look to FOIA, FOIA and the NPRA are not the same thing. And here's why. Unlike FOIA, the NPRA explicitly contains a statement regarding its purpose. It says in the NPRA that the Public Records Act is designed to promote democracy itself. It has mandates regarding interpretation that are not contained in FOIA. In addition, unlike FOIA, the NPRA specifically sets forth a burden that a governmental entity has in overcoming the presumption in favor of access, in favor of the reach of the Public Records Act. They have to prove confidentiality by a preponderance of the evidence. That's not so in the FOIA context. And in the FOIA context, there's a totally different procedural mechanism where a governmental entity can seek summary judgment. That's the procedural posture of the cases that you're seeing. Most of the cases that both parties cited about FOIA, in those cases, the governmental entity has sought summary judgment. The other party, the requester, has said, we think that there's tribal issues. The district court has said no. The district court has made a factual determination in those cases that discovery is not appropriate, and the reviewing courts have generally said we're going to defer to that factual determination. Those cases involve much more detailed declarations and information, including identifying what databases are searched and how they're searched, much more detailed than the declarations in this case. And they operate from a different procedural framework. I think even under the FOIA standard, however, I do think that the review journal might be entitled to discovery in this case. I agree with the court that the question about whether any discovery to be issued is illegal is premature. We have not issued custodian of record depositions because this emergency petition arose, and those depositions and the scope of those depositions was contingent on a meeting confer with party representatives and hopefully us resolving some of the issues before we even needed to do that. There was the hope and the possibility on both sides that those depositions
What do you say to the point, and I know Justice Perigari asked you this, but that there is no neutral at this meet and confer, and that makes it not like a settlement conference, and therefore, I understand you go to inherent authority at that point, but what's wrong with having a judicially supervised settlement conference?
I don't think there's anything wrong with having a judicially supervised conference. I don't think it's necessary at this stage. I think at some point, Judge Hardy did discuss even the possibility of somebody overseeing the ongoing production.
Because he talks about a discovery master or something.
Yes. I think he says that by the time I oversee it myself, maybe a discovery master is appropriate in this case. And while it is true that Bedro has been producing some documents, there are ongoing disputes between the parties. So the idea that it's moot is not the case. There are ongoing disputes. They're far from done with their productions. There's questions about the scope of redactions. There's still questions and disputes about the costs.
What was envisioned, Ms. McClatchy, by the term meet and confer in these orders? We've been throwing this around. Maybe it has a different definition to different people. I'm surprised that Mr. Crosby would argue that you would be able to have a reporter present in a meet and confer where you're trying to identify and sort out the production of documents in a documents request in which they're interrogating, was the term he used, his representative. Was that envisioned in this process?
Well, the reporter would be there not as a reporter reporting on the meet and confer, but rather the reporter would be there because the reporter...
Well, I did this for a long time, and I had reporters present, and generally speaking, these document requests are generated by the thoughtful and research efforts of the reporters who are generating the story. And so it's very important to have them present because they know the information that they're trying to request. But my question's a bit different. What was meant within the definition of meet and confer? Was it intended to provide an opportunity for the reporter to conduct an interview of the representative from Metro that could be used in the story? I don't think that's the purpose of the MPRA.
That was not my understanding of what was intended, Your Honor. I think the understanding of the judge...
I guess my concern is that the court seems to be we're being invited to answer boogeyman questions here. We haven't had a meet and confer where the problem Mr. Crosby's worried about has taken place. There are opportunities in the order to address them if they occur. It seems like we're premature.
I think that's correct. He could certainly suspend a meet and confer if either I or the reporter acted inappropriately. He could seek a protective order. The court was...
Well, what's interesting about this, we have a whole panoply of rules that address what happens when somebody improperly behaves in response to discovery or in the course of a deposition. But I don't know if we have a whole panoply of rules that talks about what happens when somebody doesn't do something in a meet and confer.
Sure. But, you know, in thinking about this meet and confer, the way that I envision it, in a prior lifetime, I worked at a big firm and did a lot of electronic discovery work. Mm-hmm. And in that context, we often did have calls with counsel and party mm-hmm. representatives of both sides, not just computer forensic experts, but also IT representatives. And I see it a little bit like that. The reporter is much smarter than I am about databases and information much more well-versed, even though I've litigated a number of cases against Metro. He's much better versed than I am in the technical issues regarding the databases that exist. And, of course, the reporter knows better than I do. And so having that reporter there, being able to talk to a real person from Metro, what the district court recognized is that that could be very productive, could save resources, and could whittle down the issues in the case.
I just know from my own experiences that if the lawyer for the government and I met as lawyer for the Reno Gazette Journal, we would take hours and hours because neither one of us really knew what we were talking about. You needed to have the journalist present, and you needed to have the government representative present, so people could focus on what was being requested and what was available.
I think that's very much the case. I think Metro has even conceded that having Mr. Joseph, the investigative reporter, present at the initial meeting, did help resolve some issues. And the district court noticed this too and said, but Metro had to then call its client, and information seems to be lost in translation here. That's what the district court said. Mr. Crosby and I tried to resolve this case, I think, for over a year before we filed the action in the district court. When we had the meeting confer with Mr. Joseph present, we were able to resolve issues that Mr. Crosby and I, frankly, I don't even think he and I understood. And having that initial meeting confer with even just one side there was able to resolve some, but not all of the issues. And I think that what the district court did operate from his inherent jurisdiction. And I also think it's consistent with the NPRA and the overall mandate. So it was, let's get this case done quickly, and let's get this case done right so that we can get the records out there and not waste taxpayers.
Okay, I think we're going to have to cut it off here. Mr. Crosby, you get the last say for 2 minutes.
And I don't agree with you on it. I think we addressed most of the issues. But I want to point out, Ms. McCutcheon and I did work for a year trying to work this out. And the one impasse, quite candidly, really two impasses, was how much it was going to cost and how long it was going to take, given the nature of the request for 3 years of sex trafficking arrests, triple arrests, grand larceny B arrests, trespassing 213 properties. The department doesn't have a group of people at the time sitting down to respond to public records. And that was the impasse, quite candidly. We faced very early on. I gave her an estimate based upon the test run case that we did, which was 200 cases. Pages identified something like 678 cases. At the 50 cent per page extraordinary use fee under the NPRA, I estimated that the cost of the records on that request would be $67,400, give or take.
So it's really not a discovery issue. It's a burdensome issue.
That was what we initially advanced. This discovery issue morphed out of this discussion we had in this litigation. And now what we have with respect to the discovery issue is that the documents are being produced. Before the cases identifying discovery, addressing discovery, dealt with the government agency that was not producing records and why they aren't producing records and the reasons why those records shouldn't be produced under the FOIA in that respect. The department is producing its records, and while there are discussions with respect to redactions of those documents, the parties can work together on that issue. That is quite different than forcing a party representative to a meet and confer with no judicial authority to do so for purpose of conducting an interview. And with respect to the ultimate goal...
Wait. That makes me want to ask you the same question that I asked Ms. McClatchy. What was your understanding of the definition of meet and confer? Is there some definition I'm not aware of that is universal?
No, I think in
So what makes you think that the term would be interpreted in a way in which the reporter would be able to interrogate and interview your representative?
Go ahead and answer.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I may answer that question by springboarding off Justice Pickering's comment with respect to losing my train of thought, looking at my note. To answer your question, Your Honor, my perception of the meet and confer in this case was slated to be an interview with my client about information that is not relative to what is going on in the case.
You haven't had one yet.
Correct. That was
so if you went to one and your client is now being, or seems to you to be being interviewed, and you find that objectionable for some reason, why not avail yourself of the court processes here to sort that out in front of Judge Hardy?
To
twofold, Your Honor. The department or the district court in the first instance didn't have the authority to do that. But secondarily, as was commented, we have a lot of rules about what happens when someone doesn't do what they're supposed to do, but there's no panoply of rules for a meeting for other than going in good faith.
Well, but wait a minute. It's going to be a very interesting, if we can't find a case, I mean, between Justice Pickering and Ms. McClatchy and you, and I didn't look yet, and I'm not nearly as capable as she is to look.
I wouldn't say that, but she's much more capable than me.
Regarding the authority about requiring a party representative to be present, I doubt we're going to find much authority about the scope and the nature of the application of bad faith to somebody who didn't show up at a meet and confer or behaved in a way that was problematic.
Well, there's no guideline for it because I didn't find any case law that permits it or a rule to permit it. But certainly going and not answering questions at a meet and confer in the context of this case, I think would be arguably bad faith. Oh, so I subject my client by going to this, exposing themselves to that. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, there is no authority for the court to order a party representative without a third party.
But I would think you would embrace the analog of a settlement conference, because some of the case law on party representatives being ordered to a settlement conference is you cannot be compelled to settle a case. A court cannot compel you to fold your hand and punish you for not doing so. Right. So to my mind, it's a win-win. I mean, I am struggling. This case is premature in my estimation because we don't have what we need to really assess it. But it does seem like an effort by the judge to say, parties, can you please settle this? Can you have the people who understand what she wants and how much it's going to cost in terms of time and money and come to some medium middle ground about it? I think that's a fair settlement conference request.
If that were the case, but I think that the district court's order was go to the meet and confer and answer their questions.
Okay. Yeah,
thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Crosby. Ms. McClatchy, thank you for your excellent arguments and materials submitted to us. We will wrestle with this one here now. We'll take it under submission. And we'll